Do newspapers still matter? What about the TV debates? And how much impact is social media having? The presenters of Newscast, When It Hits the Fan, and the Today podcast joined up to discuss the issues. Search for any of those shows on BBC Sounds. Our 6:30 comedy is in a moment. We'll find out which town Mark Steele has decided to tease this week after this.
Dirty Old Town, Hugh McCall's folk classic about my city, Salford, is 75 years old. In a new archive on 4, I'll tell the story of this famous song.
It's a lonely song, and you should hear the solo singer ruminating and thinking.
And we'll hear a new version performed by Ewan's widow, the folk legend Peggy Seeger, and the BBC Philharmonic, recorded as part of a wider celebration across the BBC. Dirty Old Town at 75, with me, Mike Sweeney, on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds. This Saturday night at 8.
Now it's time for Mark Steele's In Town.
West Malvern.
Great Malvern.
Little Malvern.
Malvern Wells.
Malvern Link.
There's North Malvern, which is where we are.
Fantastic hill range.
Never seems like you're walking downhill. It's always uphill.
Do you not agree, gentlemen?
Absolutely.
We do agree, yeah.
Collecting water from the springs, there's often a pretty large queue.
My husband uses it to make his homemade beer.
Loads of famous people associated with Malvern.
C.S. Lewis.
Tolkien.
Elgar.
Roger.
George Bernard Shaw.
Everybody came here to take the waters.
Charles Darwin.
Theodore Roosevelt.
No, Franklin Delano.
Obviously, water cures everything, except it turns out TB.
It is so beautiful.
If I lived in Birmingham, I'd want to come to Malvern.
It's like a magic kingdom.
Mark Steele's In Town.
Thank you so much. Welcome to Mark Steele's In Town, which this week comes from industrial, gritty, working class Malvern. Where people amazingly keep on smiling despite the most terrible hardships. You really have got nothing to worry about here in Malvern, have you? You must hear on the news about suffering in Gaza and go, oh no, has their Waitrose run out of diced mango? There is the odd crisis in Malvern, maybe because one of your kids wants to go to the working class area of Malvern Link. I'd really rather you didn't. Some of the houses down there, they get their lampshades from B&Q. But the main thing that shapes Malvern is a massive hill, a giant ridge that sticks up between Herefordshire and Worcestershire, so absolutely everything here is steep. If you want to pop out for a loaf of bread, you've got to take a Sherpa and abseil up to Church Street. So there are hiking sticks everywhere. There are people who are 68 blocking every pavement. You have to get your hiking sticks to take the bins out here. The tourist website for Malvern says, the Malverns are perfect for cyclists. What? It's perfect for cyclists who think they can win the Tour de France. You deserve to live in a glorious setting of natural beauty because your Malvern spring water is magical. People come from all over the country to pour it into bottles and announce it's so much fresher. And we don't drink that awful tap water. We walk up to Cowley Road and drink the puddles in the street. And because it flows diagonally, it has positive pelotons that help you to speak Spanish, and that's why all the people of Malvern live to 206. Restaurants in Birmingham send people here with jerry cans to collect it so that they can tell their customers, this will make you look like you're 23 again. But the main spring on the ridge comes from the reservoir, so it's the same water that you'd get from the tap. Exactly the same. The first time I went up to the ridge, it was just so beautiful. I drove up there the first time. Have you all been up there? Do you all go up there? I get the impression you all go up there once a day. You love it up there. And then you tell everybody. On a clear day, you could see 86 counties from up there. That's a shame. It's a bit hazy today. Normally, you could see Mount Fuji. It's wonderful. And it's where you go to chat. Instead of going for a cup of tea for a chat like normal people, you march up a 1,394-feet-high beacon. I'm all for people in the countryside going, morning, lovely day, but you up there, I haven't seen you here before. Are you local? We've been here 37 years. We just came one day when there was a diversion off the M5 and... We've lived here ever since. Wouldn't go anywhere else now. Where did you get your socks? Who do you think's going to win Strictly Come Dancing? We've just had our loft insulated. It's too much! And then you like to tell people facts. If you go east, there's nothing as high as this hill until you get to Russia. Really? No. What, there's nothing in the whole of France or anywhere until you get to Russia that's as high as the ridge in Malvern. No! Don't go yes just because you've been told it all your life. There's all mountains and things everywhere. I mean, I asked someone who's quite good on this, and they went, well, I was thinking they were going, oh, no, there's somewhere in the Black Forest. And they went, yeah, actually, there's a place in Lincolnshire called Wittering. That's higher. And then there's the book, The Story of the Malverns, I've there, and that says, the Battle of Worcester was fought within sight of Malvern Hills and can therefore be included as part of Malvern's history. It doesn't make sense you can include anything that you can see from the top of a hill as part of your history, especially as you say you can see everything. Pearl Harbor can be seen from the Herefordshire Beacon and can therefore be included as part of Malvern's history. And World War II was won in Malvern. I love the claims you make for here. I read a pamphlet about C.S. Lewis that says he came to college here and always came back for weekends, and it says Lewis was inspired by the gas lamps to include them in The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Well, that's not how writing works, though, is it? Authors don't just write down the first things they see. Otherwise, his book would have been called The Wheelie Bin, The Waitrose Bag and The Tin of Beans, wouldn't it? Now, one thing we must make clear, of course, we're in Great Malvern, and all around Great Malvern are the other Malverns. Do you want to shout out what are the other Malverns? West Malvern. Malvern Link, very important. Little Malvern. North Malvern.
West Malvern.
Malvern Wells.
Malvern on Sea.
Malvern on Sea. Well, you can see the sea from the top of the hill. The sea is part of Malvern. But Great Malvern is the big dominant one, like the Russian Empire, and you're Russia in the middle. And if Little Malvern stepped out of line, you'd occupy the place like Putin. You'd be making speeches, said we had no choice, they made an omelette with eggs that weren't free range, and you'd be in there. Occasionally you hear fighter jets. Do you hear them? Yeah. Fighter jets zooming through the hills. Tourists assume it's the RAF, but it's the Great Malvern Air Force. Threatening Malvern Wells for not putting their recycling out in the right order. I came across the Friends of Malvern Springs and Wells, who have a website. It's bigger than Wikipedia, this website. They've studied and written about 130 springs and wells around Malvern. The level of detail in this thing is amazing. Every fountain and tap is mentioned. It's glorious. It says, Barnard's Green Fountain was provided in 1901 for horses and cattle to commemorate the role of animals in the empire. But in 1949, the sheep all used it and blocked up the road. So the bus drivers had to make an official complaint to get it removed. Trouble is, one of the drivers shouted at the sheep and somebody saw that and it inspired them to write Dr. Doolittle. Then on the website, there's a Malvern Springs newsletter with articles such as one telling us how important water was in the Bible, which makes the Bible sort of Malvern-y. It says... Water is mentioned 722 times in the Bible, more often than faith, hope and prayer. Because when you look at it closely, the Bible is less of a religious document and more of a manual for looking at the springs of Malvern. But But there's a science to the worship of water in Malvern. In 1756, a physician from Worcester, Dr. John Wall, analysed the local water and found, in his words, it has the least amount of dissolved matter of any water. And it's because the rocks here are so hard that the water runs down them and none of the minerals break off, leaving completely pure water with nothing in it. So Dr. John Wall advised all his patients to drink Malvern water all day and to wash in it all day, told of a patient with an eye infection. And he said, but she bathed her eyes for a week in Malvern water and now can see a flea hopping on the bed. And that's always the sign of being cured, I think. So just to be clear here, what Dr. Wall was saying was that Malvern water cured everything because there was nothing in it. Take this. What is it? Nothing. And everyone seemed to spot this. There was a poem that went round at the time. The Malvern water, says Dr. John Wall, is famous for containing nothing at all. And he was hugely popular, so other doctors copied him. And then hotels were built to accommodate all the people who came in to be cured by the water. And the whole town was built around the water cure. And the patients who would pay to sit for hours in wet sheets, saturated with water, in which there was nothing. It's genius. You might wonder how people were so daft to believe in this, but the book The Malvern Water Cure gives a clue. It says, who was it who came for these cures? Everyone who could afford the prices of these wet sheets. Titled ladies, baronets, honourables of all genders, troops of all professions. Now we have a different phrase for these people. Rich idiots. Enough people went along with this that the whole town was built around it. Hotels were built for all the patients. Dozens of doctors came in to give people the water with nothing in it. I suppose the A&E in Malvern at the time must have been a room where everyone just sat there waiting, and then once an hour the sprinkler system was set off. Everyone got drenched, so they were all cured and then left. The most prominent doctors promoting the water were Dr. Wilson and Dr. Gully, and they attracted so many customers. And everybody sat around in these hospitals, soaking wet all day. But the rules were strict. The patients were only allowed a small amount of food, no alcohol, they had to walk to the well every day, and Dr. Wilson forbids patients to write letters after dinner as it irritates the stomach and sends blood to the head. The town was built on this, but the brilliant bit is nearly all of the patients did get better, almost certainly because the titled ladies and baronets and honourables of all genders were doing a bit of exercise for the first time ever and not drinking wine or stuffing their face with pate all day, but instead they gave the credit to the water for having nothing in it. And as well as the aristocracy, Victorian celebrities came here. Charles Darwin came here for the waters. Florence Nightingale came here 10 times and was convinced by it. If she'd come here before she'd gone to the Crimea, she could have just taken some Malvern water and wandered round the battlefields with a watering can, couldn't she? So you're denied your true place in history, Malvern. She was inspired by it. That's why originally she was called the Lady of the Gas Lamp. Also, the water was bottled and sold all over the world. And even now, when you say you're going to Malvern, people say, oh, where the water comes from? And they think that for hundreds of years, it's all been fetched every morning by Mrs. Wimborne's sons, who live on Church Road. But in 1856, Malvern water was bought by Schweppes. It's been owned by Schweppes since 1856. You've been scamming us all. Oh, we're just little old Malvern sat on a hill. You've been owned by Schweppes since 1856. Because you're right, Malvern, you don't want riffraff here, inner city ruffians. You want the upper class so you can fleece them. That's... There's nothing here that's definitely sinister, just slightly disconcerting. There's a body called the Conservators here who meet every month to decide on all matters affecting the hills and the commons. They have control of the car parking fees. Not popular. Can't believe it. gone up to £7.50 for a year. What side are you on? You like the Conservators?
Yes.
Split. That is why, at this point, I'd like to introduce two Conservators. David Claw and Deborah Fox. Hello, David and Deborah.
Hello, Mark.
Deborah, can I ask you, so are you elected? Are there elections to the Conservatives?
So there are for the Conservators, but I am the Chief Executive Officer.
So you're... Yeah, you've got... I'd say that round of applause was more out of fear than anything. Yeah. I saw you've got the map. You showed me this very impressive map in your office. So what are the maps about?
That is about our jurisdiction land. Mm. And every time we acquire a piece of land, we colour it in pink. Mm.
Yes, I saw that.
Which goes against the theory that we're trying to sell off Malvern land, because nothing could be further from the truth.
No, it does also go with the theory that you're trying to be a bit like the British Empire. Every few days, another bit pink. David, you took us up to the Beacon yesterday, and it was glorious. It was indeed marvellous. Now, one thing I was surprised by, there's an electric fence there.
Is
that natural?
It depends whether you touch it or not. But
it seems a bit harsh.
It's temporary and it helps to protect some of the ancient monument bits that we are trying to ensure don't get damaged.
Strictly speaking, though, to keep it in tune with Malvern, shouldn't it be a gas fence? I'll just ask you this. What's the issue with the ski lift? I feel that's very much like going into the middle of Jerusalem and going, right, who's on what side?
There is another school of thought that says a cable car would be much better because that wouldn't damage the surface.
So do you think that's likely to happen, a cable car?
I don't think that's likely to happen because that would involve building on and encroaching on the common land, and we're here to keep people off of it. Sorry, I should have...
You know what he meant.
I should have said we're just trying to keep the people who get off at Malvern Link off of it.
Thank you so much. Thank you very, very much for David and Deborah. But your biggest cultural figure is Edward Elgar. Brought up in Worcester, but he moved here and he lived here for years and he loved the Malvern Hills. But you don't make a song and dance about him, do you? You've just got the one statue on a special platform in the centre of town and another one in the park and 400 signs pointing to his grave and name almost everything after him, including the beautiful Elgar Avenue in Malvern Link. Elgar moved house 22 times, mostly around here, each time saying he couldn't stay where he was as it was too noisy. He wrote symphonies. He was probably stood in his garden most days going, what do you think of this? Ba ba da 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 da, the hypocrite. But nonetheless, there are statues of him in Worcester and there's one in Hereford, which is a bit cheeky because Hereford hates being lumped in with Worcester usually. They don't mind when they can claim Elgar, do they? Elgar was inspired by the view from Malvern Hills, but there was more to this than just admiring the pretty colours, because when he started composing at the end of the 19th century, landscapes weren't just about admiring the views. The whole idea of the countryside was under threat from industrialisation, which was worshipped, and it could in theory have gone on and on until all rural landscape was destroyed, with only David and Deborah to protect it. When Elgar was growing up in Worcester, where his dad tuned pianos, Worcester was grimy, proper grimy. Not like now, when you think anywhere's grimy if it's got an all bar one and a multi-storey car park. So Elgar saw the countryside as a statement of nature holding out against the smoke and the Worcester sauce. And He idolised childhood and imagination and fairies and anything that was good for the spirit rather than just to make a profit. And Elgar felt a love for the landscapes of Malvern because they were alive and hopeful and full of drama and not just functional. So he wrote a series of choral works called Caractacus, celebrating the fight against the Romans in the hills of Malvern. And it should have been part of a trilogy of things that didn't happen in Malvern. But he wrote symphonies, string quartets, hundreds of songs, choral pieces, pomp and circumstance. He celebrated a pre-industrial England, and then he wrote these patriotic pieces during the First World War. And Elgar loved it here, Malvern. No wonder you named everything after him. He wanted to be cremated at Powick, and on his deathbed he said, "If you're ever on the Malvern hills and hear someone whistling, that's me." So you took no notice of him and buried him in the graveyard at St. Wolstan's Church. Originally, it was in the middle of the graveyard, but the ghosts were making a terrible racket, so he demanded to be moved. And the other famous person buried here is Roger, who invented the thesaurus. And five different people have said to me, "Did you know Roger is buried here? Buried, interred, entombed..." To rest. Something else commemorated here that is so sweet is the Friends of Malvern Springs, with their big website, have set up an organisation to bring together all the Malverns around the world. You don't want to mix with the other Malverns. Everything's fine here. Even when you do have a bit of industry, it's to make Morgan cars. Oh, we make our own classical cars, you know. We don't have to send away for them. Have you all been to the factory?
Yes.
It's fantastic. It's down the hill in Malvern Link. Because it's still manual labour, even if it's to make classical cars. It's a fantastic story. What is brilliant about it? So you wander around and people are just making things, and you can understand this is a lump of wood that is going to be under the metal, and then someone's spraying it and someone's putting a wheel on. That's pretty much all there is to it. Something that lots of people here have told me is that John Harvey Jones made one of his troubleshooter television programmes there in the 1980s, and he concluded the business would soon have to close down, which it clearly hasn't. And one reason that he felt it would have to close down is that on his way round, he asked a metal worker there, "How long have you been working here?" And he said, 40 years. So John Harvey Jones said, 40 years? You must have seen a lot of changes in that time. And the worker went, "No, not really." And I was shown round by Cousin Nick, who I'll speak to in a minute. That is his name. I felt a bit guilty because I understand so little about classic cars. And he was going, "Oh, the amazing thing with this model is the torsional rigidity." And I'm going, "Oh, yes, that's very torsionally rigid." Even the factory is classy. The roof was designed to be the exact shape and angle of the hill that it faces. And to add to the sense of classiness, until recently, if you ordered a Morgan, you had to wait 8 years to get it delivered. And so I would love to introduce Nick, who conducts the tours around the factory. Nick, why do you love Morgans?
Oh, well, it is, as you said, we've got the craftsmen there, the skills still today. I come into work and I leave and I've given lots of people pleasure, which I know...
You know what he means!
Yeah. People leave happy.
That's they the do. Carry on up the Morgan factory. Oh, look at the carburetors on that one. The history of the place is fascinating. During the war, they were taken over by the government to make planes. The trouble is, by the time the planes were delivered, it was 1952. And how long is the wait now?
Oh, 6 to 12 months.
But so everything else takes that now, doesn't it? If you ring up for a wardrobe, it takes 6 to 12 months. Outside, there's a row of them in the car park, and you feel pathetic even taking the trouble to lock your own car. Lastly, are you worried that you're in a rough area down there?
Yeah. We have been looking at the fencing around there.
I know where you can get an electric one. Thank you so much to Cousin Nick. And you've got other establishments here that you might not expect in hilly, rural Worcestershire. There was a secret research establishment in World War II. The British sent someone to Uruguay to buy a scuttled German battleship, pretending to be a scrap metal dealer. And then they brought bits of this battleship back to Malvern to analyse it so they could work out how its radar system worked. And that was done here. The writer Brian Viner, who lives locally, said it's not entirely fanciful to suggest if the war was won from anywhere... It was won in Malvern. And the base here carried on as a secret research centre, a bit like the GCHQ base in Cheltenham, except everyone's heard of that one, but no one's heard of yours because you're so much better at being secretive than blabbery Cheltenham. Ooh, guess what we've got, everybody? We've got a secret spying place that nobody knows about. In 1999, Malvern Water was bought from Schweppes by Coca-Cola, and then Coca-Cola shut the plant down. And then the magnificently named Carly Tinkler, president of the Malvern Spa Association. Was Carly Tinkler written by a children's author? Now comes the head of the Water Federation, Mrs. Tinkler. She said it is a tragedy for the town, and also as the Queen drinks Malvern Water, people are worried about the Queen. It was very, very similar to when the British coal field shut down. And there are other disasters that have happened here. A cafe burnt down on the ridge, so did a little theatre that was converted from a toilet. I suppose the cost of putting fires out here is massive because the fire brigade used bottled spring water. You call them, hello, I'm at number 55, the whole place is ablaze, send someone quickly. Still or spark. But this is perfect, Malvern, because no one could stay completely out of the modern world, not even you. To the outsider, it seems as if you've got everything you want here, and maybe it is too perfect here, but now you're doing deals with Coca-Cola, you're linking up with all the other Malverns across the world, all that well-dressing and hill-walking could be a front. It could be that you're actually planning world domination with your pink mats. Maybe you're dangerous, you're a global player, you won the Second World War, you're self-sufficient, you make your own cars... You've got your own water. Worcester has got its own sauce. Hereford has got its own cider. But you've got top scientists plotting away under a hill. Maybe you're all working for the spy centre and that's why you stop everyone on the ridge and interrogate them for 2 hours. One day, one of your conservators will rub a gas lamp in a special way and one of those hills might open up. That weird dome thing at St James's Girls' School will spin round and take off and there'll be an underground bunker full of missiles ready to be fired across the world while playing Land of Hope and Glory. So I will leave you, Malvern, with part of Elgar's diary, written in 1912, in which he explained his feelings towards the hope and the glory of Malvern and its hills. I had been working for several months on my symphony that would elicit the full majesty and awesome triumph of the Worcester Beacon and its rolling hills and the water that springs from it. My publisher, a fine fellow, said, "There's nothing written on the page." Exactly, I said. There's no music in it, which is why it's so pure and superior to the music that is spoilt by notes and sounds. Also, if my neighbours are playing it, I won't have to move house, I added. Thank you very much.
Mark Steele's In Town was written and performed by Mark Steele, with additional material from Pete Sinclair.
It was produced in Malvern by Carl Cooper and was a BBC Studios audio production for Radio 4. And you can join Mark at the same time next Monday when he'll be in East Grinstead.
Screenshot is Radio 4's programme exploring the ever-expanding universe of the moving image.
And in a jam-packed new series, we'll dive, into underwater cinema.
And discover why Westerns are having a resurgence.
Plus, how do you make an iconic love triangle movie? Two decades after, one of the classics will go behind the scenes on the making of The Notebook.
It was so apparent, the chemistry between Ryan and Rachel was profound.
The new series of Screenshot with me, Ellen E. Jones.
And me, Mark Kermode.
Friday evenings at 7:15 on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.